have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here, another episode of the Business Broker Growth Show. Today I have the amazing Jessica Fiakovic. She is the president and founder of Exit Factor. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jason. It's great to be here.
I'm excited for this. I think this is going to be fun. I think I said this the last episode. I say this with all the guests. Everyone is fun for me. I enjoy these conversations, especially because you, in the string of conversations I've been having for the show, are different than what somebody might expect on a show called the Business Broker Growth Show, because you're not a business broker, which is going to be fun. We're going to talk about that a little bit for your intro so that people know what we're going to cover and what your perspective is that you focus on helping businesses with their exit strategy, business growth, things like that, all the stuff that helps a business maximize their exit. You wrote a book called The Exit Factor. And really what's interesting about what you do for the audience to understand is that, again, you're not a broker. So you're working for that business owner, helping them set themselves up for success, which could be definitely an episode all to itself. And so what I'm excited, let's talk about it. Let's start, because I think it's interesting, is how did you get into this versus, let's say, business brokerage?
Yeah. So interesting. So I actually started in business brokerage. So I'm a serial entrepreneur. I founded and started and sold a number of businesses. And I sold one of my businesses in the luxury wine space, sold it through a broker, not a great broker. We'll protect his name, right? But so I saw an opportunity to do just brokerage a little bit better. So my husband and I started a single brokerage in Denver, Colorado. I've since stepped out of that world. I am not a great broker, right? So all the advice and stuff that we're going to talk about, like, I'm just not a salesperson, right? That's just not me, right? So my husband continues to run that brokerage side of the business with our partners, but he now operates in three different states, five major markets. He has 100 brokers that work for him. And they've done over, I think, since we've owned the company, we've done way over 2,000 businesses. Yeah. But I found through my journey that I liked working hands-on with the owners a lot more, helping improve their operations, improve their financials so they could exit for more money. So I started an exit planning, or what's more specifically called value growth, of working with businesses to grow their profitability and the value so they can exit on their own terms. I started in that area in 2018 and have been doing that since then.
Okay. So several things I want to go back to.
Yeah.
Before we move forward. So it's interesting about your journey with selling the luxury wine business that you did, is I talked to a lot of brokers where either they had a great experience selling their own business with a broker, mm-hmm. they're like, this is great, I want to do that. Or they had a not so good experience, or the broker wasn't that great, and they're like, I want to do this, but be way better at it. Like, it's fascinating, you know, from hearing you, that you had door number two.
Yeah. And I think looking back at it now, like, it is a very tough career as a business broker, right? It's not for a faint of heart. I also say, like, it's also tough to be a spouse of a business broker. Like, I feel for all the spouses, right? Deals are on, they're off, like, they're always working a commission. So I do, like, give, like, the broker that presented that sale in hindsight, like, some due credit, right? So he did bring us a full price buyer, and within 30 days, we closed on that sale within 90 days, which is, like, unheard of, full price within 90 days. I know that now, right? But I didn't appreciate what I've come to really focus on of what makes a great broker from a not so great broker, right? He is what I would have called a jack of all trades. So he introduced us to the buyer, he disappeared. We ran due diligence on our own and negotiated the deal on our own. But, you know, he came back and he tried to sell me life insurance after the deal closed, or asked me where I was investing my money and had, like, some investment scheme that he was running, right?
Yeah.
And so business brokerage was, like, almost like, I don't want to call it a side hustle, but he was so focused on all the other things that he was doing, because it was obvious he wasn't doing well with the brokerage, right? And making enough money that way. So No. And I think it's really important as a professional, and like, we can talk a little bit about like, you know, focus and niches down the road, but as a professional, like, especially look, my world's exit strategy. And how I think about exit strategy is any professional that helps a business owner extract value from their company, right? So that could be a value growth advisor like myself. It could be a business broker, but there's other professionals in there too. CPA's got to be involved, a CFO, an attorney typically, sometimes multiple attorneys, right? But like, we should all be really good at what we functionally do, right? And so great business brokers, great value growth advisors make very healthy livings, right? And we don't need to dip into other stuff. And can you find ways to maximize other pieces of revenue through referral partnerships or referral fees? Absolutely. But like, if we're really great, like if I want to be a great value growth advisor, I want to partner with a great business broker. Cause like I said at the top of the call, I'm not a great business broker. Right. And so could I capture that commission and do some of these deals myself? Yes. Would I be doing the best job for my client? No, because I'm not an expert in that area. Right.
Yeah. And I think there's that like super side note, we won't go down this rabbit hole, but you know, the feeling of multiple streams of income, right? Depending on what gurus or what things you listen to or who you talk to, like, you know, people have multiple streams of income. So you could see that scenario where it's like, well, I'm a business broker and a commercial broker. And I also have these are all my streams of income. And the missing piece is that in order to be really successful is you have your main thing that you've basically mastered. And then you have maybe multiple things that are running on the side, but not spinning all those plates at the same time, trying to get good at it.
Yeah. Or could be a lack of creativity in the industry. Like within business brokerage, there's a way to have multiple streams of income. Like I'll give some examples. Like you can earn sell side commissions. You can earn buy side commissions. You can earn referral fees on SBA lenders and SBA deals that you're doing. You can earn referral fees from franchisors to send your buyers to them, right? You can hire agents and earn commissions that your agents are making, but you're still staying within the realm of expert as a business broker without now adding on something else. So like sometimes like they think you just need to think a little bit deeper into what your expertise is. And there's always different pillars of income within there without having to go stand up a whole other business or whole other practice to add another pillar of income, right?
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. And I like that clarification because I think that's helpful to understand. And I think for people out there, it's like, how do you maximize those pillars within the main structure, which is whatever it is that you're focusing on that you want to master. Now, one thing you said too, because I don't want to move too far forward without bringing this up, is you said you're not a great business broker because you're not a salesperson. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that? Everything in life is sales, even in what you do now, it's sales. But like, why do you differentiate sales hats for as a business broker versus
So I think there's different types of sales and like you know this, right? Okay. But excellent business brokers are hunters, right? Their job, if you think of it, is transactional in nature. You form a relationship with a business owner, and the best business brokers are great hunters because they're going to go out and they're going to hunt for a buyer and they're going to hunt for the buyer for the right deal, right? And they're focused on that engagement for 6 to 18 months, whatever it is, right? I'm more what you would describe a farmer, right? Where I'm more working with somebody that I'm going to work with over a long time and a long relationship. I'm not the one that's going to go out and hunt for the best transaction, but more in the consultancy side of like getting in the nitty gritty businesses and a little bit of operations hat too is what I do really well. And so that's what doesn't make a good business broker. Great business broker has that hunter quality. Like I'll hear a lot of times like, well, what are some of the best qualities of business brokers? And one of the ones is you have to be a great sales hunter because you're hiring this person to go out and find you a buyer and find you the best deal. You want them to hunt, right? So
Yeah. And that makes sense, right? So you got to have that personality and that mindset, which is different than, let's say, you know, using the correlation within residential real estate, where many realtors just put a house on the MLS, they make up some flyers, maybe they hold an open house. And they're just sitting back. It's more fishing than hunting, right? They're sitting, hoping something just like bites the hook instead of actively going out to find it. And I love the fact that you're self-aware enough and realizing like your long-term relational, just more operational project focused than hunting.
Yeah.
Hunt in hunting mode.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's just not me, right?
It's just not you, which is perfect. So let's talk about the focus side. So one of the things you mentioned was you know, the broker you had experience with is, you know, was basically felt like a jack of all trades and doing lots of things. Mm-hmm. And so instead, I know that you're a big fan of like mastering one thing and being part of one thing, which is what you mentioned. And so where does that go also into industry focus, niching mm-hmm. down, where somebody's like, I picked this industry and I know this industry and I want to be a part of this one. Like, does that fall under that? And how do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic. This is like one of my hot take things. So I'm a huge proponent of, like you said, focus on a functional expertise, business brokerage, okay. value growth, CFO, right? But I'm anti-industry focus for a couple of reasons. One, you know, putting my value growth hat on, right? It's a bad business strategy because if you're focused in one industry, your business then becomes dependent on that industry. So for example, one of my exit factor clients once was a recruiter for high-level technology employees in big tech firms, right? When the tech firms stop hiring, the business goes down, awkward. Right? So that's yeah. called something called industry concentration. For brokers specifically, I don't like it because I said hunters are really important when you're hiring a business broker. The second or probably most important quality, though, you want to look for in a business broker is creativity. What I think people don't realize is the best business brokers are super creative in putting deals together. You know, one of my mentors, one of the best business brokers I know, his name is Peter Berg. He used to say, you know, a deal's not dead enough, right? A deal will live nine lives, right? Because he always wanted a new shot to recreate the deal or restructure the deal, right? But how the best business brokers get that deal experience and get the creativity is dealing in different types of deals, right? So, you know, I was just talking to somebody and they own an advertising agency and there's a couple brokers that just specialize in advertising agencies, right? And I said, well, I think you want to look for that's called a generalist, which is a business broker that deals across industries. And the reasons why are twofold. One, if I just sell advertising agencies, I get caught up in this methodology of this is how deals are done in the agency space, which is not true. There's no way, one way that deals are done in any space, right? If I did a telecom deal and I structured an earnout in a specific way, there's no reason I can't apply that to an advertising agency, right? The second reason I don't like industry expertise is because I do think ethics and fiduciary responsibility come into play a little bit, right? So, and I'll explain that a little bit, but if I'm a business broker and I'm focused in one specific industry, agencies, right? For example, I'm going to work with the same buyers over and over and over and over. Now I'm getting paid by the seller and I have a fiduciary responsibility to the seller, but do I want to burn the bridges with all of these buyers that continue to buy my deals? Or is there some ethical blurred line there? Because I'm playing in this industry and these buyers stay in this industry, this seller is selling out and going to be out of the industry, right? Am I accusing any specific broker of doing that? No. But is there a potential for ethical situations more when you're focused specifically in one industry niche than if you're more general? Yeah, there is. So that's kind of the two reasons that I don't like industry niches, but specifically, the reason I like generalist brokers is because they have that creativity because they've worked across lots of different types of businesses. So,
yeah, which makes sense, right? Like you and I were talking before, I was talking about my sales consulting past. And one of the things that was challenging was because I felt like I could just help anybody with sales. So it makes it difficult to scale or market. But it was always fascinating too when companies would come to me and say, well, have you ever sold insurance or have you ever sold this? And it's like, no, but A, I've bought enough insurance to know what it should feel like. And two, like, I know what you're probably doing wrong. And if I have to explain insurance to you, then you have a problem like I can't solve anyway. And so like, I understand what you're saying because it's like, what do you learn from other industries? What can you take in there and apply instead of like, here's how we only do this one thing, which, you know, makes sense. And then that fiduciary part I think is valuable because, you know, if you're in one industry, how can you guarantee to that seller that you've done the best effort to create as much competition as possible?
Yeah.
To get, you know, the best offer that they're going to want.
Yeah. And if you're just marketing it to it within that in those industry buyer groups and you're not taking it out to a biz buy sell or, you know, a large buyer database, then you haven't done the best job. Right. So. Yeah.
So interesting. So let's talk about with the exit planning side.
Yeah.
it's interesting too, because it's one of the things where I thought, because I actually started connecting with business brokers back in 2020, where I thought as a sales consultant, like this would be a great referral. Business brokers would refer me in and business owners would just be excited to maximize, you know, their revenue upside. And none of that happened. And it didn't actually work at any point. And so it's fascinating to think that you've built this model and the structure to help business owners do that very thing, like with all of it, including the operations. And so what's the biggest challenge, but I feel like it's probably the same as everything, but like what's the difficulty that you face in making that arrangement work? Like from the beginning, getting those or moving that forward, like what are you up against?
So I think from a client acquisition perspective, like the biggest challenge is getting our business owners to prioritize important over urgent, right? Mm-hmm. Especially our market is we serve small to mid-sized business owners, so typically business owners that are up to 25 million in revenue. And those are a lot of owner operators, you know, some of them have significant size teams, but most of them are still heavily involved in the business, right? And so, and I've been in that situation myself too. So you have a million fires going on and it's very easy to put off long-term commitments, long-term planning, right? Now, the reality of it is you may have heard for exit planning, it's ideal to plan 5 to 7 years in advance, right? There's a method to that madness of like why that number is 5 to 7 years. But that's really hard for a business owner to grasp. I mean, some business owners don't even know if they're going to exit in 5 years or 7 years, right? And so just having that conversation with a business owner and making them realize that you don't have to go full force into exit planning, but there's some steps you should take, even if I had my cup of tea, like from the inception of your business or when you first buy a business, to start to have some of those long-term planning talks and some of those strategies, but just getting them to prioritize these long-term, very, very important decisions they're making over their salesperson quitting today or losing their biggest account or starting a new marketing strategy, like whatever the red hot fire is in front of their face. So,
yeah. And I can imagine that's difficult, right? Because, you know, if they're not thinking about exiting, or even if they are, but they're not sure when, that's a future thing, right? That's a, you know, like sometimes I joke about, like, that's a tomorrow problem. That's not a today problem. I got enough today problems I got to deal with, like, let alone put those things in place. And so, like, what's the minimum amount of time you would want for effectiveness if there is a guideline?
Yeah. So I guess we'll kind of walk through the timeline a little quicker, because you can affect change in 6 months, right? Okay. Can you change the value of a business and increase it by 50% in 6 months? Absolutely not, right? But like, I think 6 months is the bare minimum. If you want to, you know, do basically a reverse due diligence and make sure that if you sell your business, the deal's not going to die, right? So that's really in that first 6 months what you're focused on. If you have a year in advance, you can start looking at cleaning up like some financials and start positioning the business a little bit better, achieve a little bit of lift. I think the real impact happens if you can do about 3 years in advance. And here's why, because when you exit a business, and it doesn't matter if you sell to a third party or to your family or the management team or whatever, you're going to have a valuation done on the company, and the buy side is going to do it, but also the lender that's involved is going to do it. And what they're going to do is they're going to do a weighted average of your earnings over the last 3 to 5 years, right? So here's where this 5 to 7 years comes into play, right? Is because if we're doing a weighted average of 5 years, ideally we want 2 years to fundamentally get the business in a good place, like our margins as high as possible. Then we want 5 years of performance to maximize that weighted average. There's the 7 years. But if you've got 3 years and you can put in a year of good fundamental practices and then 2 years of kind of like great financial performance, like it's averaged together, then you can achieve that business value increase. But you know, you can have some change in any time frame, but I'd say 3 to 5 years is probably your best chance at getting the best increased results. So,
you mentioned earlier operations. Like for you, do you have a favorite part? I know it's probably like picking a favorite child, but like, do you have a favorite part when, you know, a new client business brings you on board and you're like, all right, this is the part I love the most?
I'm an entrepreneur by nature, so I love growth the most. And my background's marketing, and like, so I love that side of it. I had to be very disciplined as a consultant because our methodology with Exit Factor is to fix the fundamental business model first and then grow the business, right? Okay. So I'm a big believer, and I've learned from a lot of mentors that if you grow something that's broken, it just becomes more broken, right? And so we first have to fix the financial model, and we have to fix the operational model. So then we have a good foundation for the business. So now then when we apply growth, you're providing growth at an exponential factor related to the value of the company, right?
Yeah.
But that is my favorite part, right? I just have to be disciplined that for some clients, we don't get there for a year. And so I keep my notebook of all my ideas, right? And I try not to distract them with my squirrel brain and, you know, close my mouth for a little bit. Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's got to be tough. I know this. I know that mode, you know, before when I would do consulting with teams and owners are like, all right, so we're going to start growing. I was like, no, I guarantee you, I'll tell you who probably shouldn't be here anymore and what's broken and what we need to fix, but definitely don't add more into what you've got now because it's not working.
Yeah.
Is there any areas that you see that's just a common dumpster fire in that, you know, owner-led business? Maybe they're the technician, maybe they're the visionary.
Yeah, there's two common areas. The one is financials. Every owner, even the best owners that have like CFO backgrounds and things like that, they don't see their financials like a buyer or a banker or a lender would, right? And so there's something always missing in the financials that's very clear to an outsider. We're working with an event planning company right now. And so they have like four or five major events every year. And so I said, okay, can you show me the profitability on your major conference? And they're like, well, what are you talking about? And I'm like, you have five events a year. This is going to be one of the key questions a buyer is going to ask is which event's most profitable? Are the profit margins consistent event to event, right? And so that's one example, but there's usually some type of financial issue that's very clear from an outsider that should be, you know, a little bit, I want to say more clear, but like just more clear in the presentation of the financials. In some cases, it's very, very inadequate from the financial performance where we just don't have updated books and records. Things aren't categorized properly. There's mixed entities and expenses and personal stuff. And, you know, we see that, but there's almost always a financial issue, right? From a reporting error management issue. There's almost also related to financials. Almost every client we work with is under profitable versus the competitors in their industry that get premium valuations, right?
Oh.
And so this is a methodology that I really just disagree with in entrepreneurship in general. But like as entrepreneurs, we're kind of groomed to grow at all costs, right? And if you think about this, we have like Inc. 5000 awards and organizations like EO and YPO that reward us for revenue thresholds, right? And so the subconscious message is grow at all costs, invest in growth, invest in growth, invest in growth. But then when you go to exit, we're like, oh, hey, where are your profit margins at? What do you mean? I've been investing in my business for the last 15 years, right? And so even some of our clients that think they're like best in class for profitability, when we show them some of the comparative data, almost always they're under profitable for their industry. And then the last component is we talk about a lot, and you hear this across like all exit planning industry professionals, but let's say like the business is too owner dependent, right? And I think that's, you know, a little bit of a cop out. Like almost all small to mid-sized businesses are owner dependent. I think the key issue we see there is entrepreneurs can't figure out how to delegate appropriately to their team members because of an emotional attachment to the business or how the work is done. Right. And so that's the key issue we actually have to solve. So
before a seller ever speaks to you, they look you up. They scan your name, they search your LinkedIn, they read your last few posts. And in about 60 seconds, they decide whether you feel like a trusted advisor or just another broker. Most brokers never see that moment, but it happens every day. That's why we built the Digital Impact Assessment. It's a structured evaluation of how your online presence actually shows up in four ways: authority, positioning, visibility, and engagement. And if you want to know what sellers are seeing before they book a call with you, just remember you can't improve what you don't measure. All right, now back to this amazing conversation.
to the business or how the work is done, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the key issue we actually have to solve. So,
which makes sense, right? It's a key differentiator, right? Like there's in that small, medium-sized business, whatever you do to draw that line, you said 25 million, then there's always going to be an owner dependence, right? Like that's most likely not a checked out, sitting on the beach, just cash and checks model. But yep. It's the difference between owner dependence of like being the leader or being a doer of it, right? Are they leading a team of people that are handling everything and their job is to be actually the chief executive officer? Or are they just in it all the time and can't quite let go?
Yeah.
You can see that being an issue. Now, of course, it doesn't matter because I've had enough conversations where there's also the buyers who are being trained by the gurus out there to just buy something where you don't even have to operate it, right? Like you can buy a business and then just sit back and cash checks, which is also not a thing.
No, it's not. It's not a thing
at all. Media market.
Yeah. And there's actually like one influencer that we're partnering with on Exit Factor. And she clarifies that very clearly. Like if you're going to be a owner of a business, like you don't have to be involved in the day-to-day, but you've got to own the business, right?
If you're listening to this and thinking, I want this level of authority, I just don't have the time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. And that's what we build for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and authority signals, everything you need that we've talked about here. So if you want this impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it would look like for your business. Now back to the episode.
There's actually like one influencer that we're partnering with on Exit Factor. And she clarifies that very clearly. Like if you're going to be a owner of a business, like you don't have to be involved in the day-to-day, but you've got to own the business, right? There's a difference between being an operator in the business and then being an active CEO and a manager. Right. But none of this, I've never, and this is like the business brokerage thing too, like why I didn't succeed. Cause people would be like, well, I want to look at absentee owner businesses. I'm like, there is no such thing in small to mid-sized business. If you want an absentee owner business, go buy something off the stock market. Right. So
that's it. So transitioning from the Exit Factor side, all that exit planning you're talking about, the timeline, you know, 6 months, 3 years, ideally 5 to 7, which makes sense. You know, it also brings to mind like what you said kind of in passing at one point so far is, you know, if people would just build it with the goal of selling it, like that's even better, like get to them day one of their operations.
Yeah.
But where does this factor in to Exit Factor? Where does this factor into like the business broker's involvements, right? Yep. Where you got this the business broker kind of going back to the commission, to the hunting side, like they, you know, maybe they need this deal or they want this listing to then think, oh, well, let me send it over to, you know, Jessica's team and then wait 3 years until this is ready, right? Like put it in the oven. And then where is that, you know, valuable? Where is that at odds? Like what have you found an experience and or what's a good tale for the brokers out there listening to this is like, you know, where it's important for them.
Yeah. So I think the best business brokers and honestly the best professionals in our larger industry want to do the best thing for their client, right? And so are there business brokers that would be like, oh, I don't want them to work on the value of their business because I've got to wait a year or two and that could be a listing for me? Yes, there are business brokers like that. But I think the best business brokers will look at a business owner and they'll say, if you have the time and energy to invest in this business and growing the value, you're not at the value you want today. You probably should invest a year or two or three to get there and then come back to me, right? So we primarily interface when brokers send us referrals, we're primarily interfacing on two types of clients. One is a client who has a long-term exit strategy and they're not quite at the value they want to be at, right?
Okay.
So a business broker might have an initial conversation and that business owner's like, yeah, I could sell, but I don't need to sell. And the broker looks at their financials and like, you're probably worth $500,000 at best. And they're like, well, I really would want 2 million. And that's a good interface for us. It's like, okay, work with Exit Factor, get it to 2 million and then grow it. The other area that we come in is if a business owner has misalign expectations on their value. And that's when we can do some of those more short-term services, the 6 months to a year, and let's clean some things up because some things are broken in the business, right?
Yeah.
And then we can come in for a shorter term. But I think it really, again, it goes back to the business broker not looking at, and I joked earlier, like it's transactional, it's short-term with business brokerage, but like the best business brokers are looking out for what's in the best long-term interest for the owner across the table for them. And if they have somebody that has time to grow or there's a misalignment of their expectations on valuation, that's typically who we're going to work with. So,
yeah. And that makes me think of like the professionals, because you use that word, right? Whether it's business brokerage or anything else sales related, the really, really good ones from a professional standpoint where they're doing what's best for the other person, not just for their own sake, are the ones that are playing the long game, kind of going to what you said about businesses. Like, hey, I want you to think 5 to 7 years. Like, I don't even know what I'm going to be doing. Will I exit? Will I still be in business? I don't know, because they're in survival mode.
Right.
Unfortunately, sometimes salespeople, especially commission only, get in survival mode. I don't even know if I'm going to be in business 6 months. So to like nurture this person for 3 years, like I can't think about it. Then there's the other ones who are like, I know I'm going to be in this. I'm committed to this. Like I'm planting seeds in this garden that I won't, you know, eat fruit from for 5 years, and I'm okay with that. And yeah. I think that's, you know, that's a differentiation.
Yeah. And it's nice too, because like in those situations, the broker can kind of like hands off nurture them because they know we're working with them on mm-hmm. what's going on. And then eventually, whether that's a year later or 2 years later, like I call a broker and be like, hey, Mike, hey, remember so-and-so, like you introduced me to 2 years ago. Well, their business value is increased by 56% and they're ready to list with you. There you go. Right. So, yeah. And so your commission's increased by 56%. Right. So
exactly. You should make the broker happy if they can just plant those seeds and, you know, plant enough seeds and play the long game. I think that's the key, right? And then they don't have to try to sell insurance or other things on the side. they could just get through that first, you know, let's say 2-3 years of the business, whatever that looks like. So, all right. So let's transition, because it's the same stuff, but let's transition to the next segment, which is the broker growth playbook. These would be the growth tips from the marketing side. You mentioned like you started the brokerage with your husband. He's still running it. It's lots of brokers over a big area. So there's obviously things that are working and growing. You, I know, because of your role in the industry, like even with the Exit Factor side, you get to see a lot. So you get a nice cross-section of good and bad brokers and or good and bad marketing or good and bad, all that stuff, which is why this is so fun. And so what would you put on your list for business broker of the things that you see that separates the ones that are running an effective marketing machine or growing their pipeline in the right way versus the rest?
Yeah. So I think first you touched on this, but they have to have this as a focus of a professional career, right? So my husband's team, they don't hire anyone part-time. You're either full-time dedicated to doing business brokerage for your clients or you're not. And how I think about that is like, if someone hires you to sell their business, like, don't you want that broker, that person to be working full-time around the clock to sell your business, not sell insurance or whatever, but it is that full-time professional career, long-term play. You don't want someone that's in the industry for a year or two and then out, right? That's related to the second point is consistency, right? So if you want to develop a great business brokerage practice, you have to be consistent day in and day out. Whatever your marketing strategies are, your relationship building strategies are, you just have to be consistent with them every single week, every single year. Like this is kind of like a business that builds like a snowball, right? The first year, my husband always says the first year in this business will be the hardest thing you'll ever do. The second year will be the second hardest thing you'll ever do. If you do all the right things, the third year it starts to be a payoff. But that doesn't mean you can stop doing the good things in year three or year four. You just have to be consistent with your marketing, with how you treat clients, with your follow-up, things like that, right?
Yeah. I think it's fascinating. I had on the show early on my second episode, a guy, I think you know him, Andy Cagnetta.
Just a little bit. We worked together for almost 15
years. You
know
him a little bit. Anyone tuning in, they kind of had a thing in the show and all this stuff. And you know, amazing content, a lot of great stuff. But one of the things that always stands out from the conversation I had with him on the podcast was, you know, being a business broker is running a business. And I think there's so many people who come into business brokerage, maybe from a sales background, or treat it like a real estate loan officer sales type thing, where they're like, I just do this thing and I make sales and I make commission. And they're not treating it like a business and doing all those other things that you're talking about, which goes into consistency, right? And so they're running it, their books are a mess, their marketing's inconsistent, like they don't have a CRM, they're using stacks of business cards and, you know, and Ziploc bags, like whatever it is, and just like, just Wild West, instead of running it like a business.
No, he's right. I mean, well, and whatever Andy said was right, because I mentioned our business brokerage is Transworld. We're one of the largest franchisees. And so, Andy's been a personal friend and mentor for me for almost 15 years. So anything I've learned has been through Andy, right? And even now as a franchisor with Exit Factor, he's been a huge component of the development of that. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I love that with the consistency, and I think that's important. And it's tough, right? Because again, it's tough for people to play the long game, be consistent, and do the unfun hard work. Like, you want to get in shape, you got to go to the gym, not just when you feel like it. You just got to do things and do it over and over again. And so I think that consistency is huge. And for a lot of people, you just do things consistently, even if you do them bad. Like, I had a friend who's like, a bad day in the gym is better than no day in the gym.
Yeah.
Just at least show up and do something.
Yep.
You will still outpace most everybody else if you just do that.
Yeah, that's really good. The last thing too, I'll share like a little bit different approach that I've used to develop my career is something called other people's audiences. And I think business brokers, excellent business brokers do this really well too. So other people's audiences could mean like me showing up on your podcast and I'm stealing your audience for my, you know, 30 minutes of fame with your audience, right? Or speaking on stage. But from like, if we take it to a business broker's perspective, it's developing those referral partner relationships and those centers of influence, right? Because as a single person, right, building a business, and Andrew's right, like every business broker is running their own business, right, underneath their brokerage firm or their franchise, but you're still running your own business. You're limited on time. That's like the one resource we can't replicate. And so at some point, you have to develop a network of people that have other audiences that you can tap into to grow your business. And so, like I said, it could be thought leadership, but more appropriately, it's usually referral partner relationship development, COIs, community engagements, things like that.
I love it. I think that's so important, right? Because you want to create leverage in any business. And when you can create leverage through somebody else's audience, where like their people will find you, and then it's a value to, you know, to that relationship. I think that's so important. And then how do you do that? Not just to take from it, but also to give to that audience.
Right.
How do you give to that group in a way where it just feels natural? Again, that's going to the relational long-term, you know, farmer side of things to match the hunter. The challenge is most people are either a hunter or a farmer. They're usually not good at both, but you still have to do both, right?
Still have to do both, right? And like, I think you can learn each skill, right? And there's certain things that you have to do. But, you know, I think ultimately, I was saying this to one of my franchisees, it's like, just how do you look at the relation, your business relationships, like where you would look like as a friendship, right? And it's like, if you're showing up, you know, I went to lunch with one of my friends today, and like one of my first questions, like, hey, what's going on in your life? Like, is anywhere I can help you, right? And if you look at a business relationship the same way, then like, you're fine, right? I think most of us hunters or farmers can have good relationships, right? So
and on that note, it's unfortunate because I see a lot of people, especially if their pipeline is thin and they're in a little desperate mode, they're going to their referral partners and they're saying, hey, so who do you know? Who are you talking to? Like, who do you got that I could help, right? And so it's I'm coming to you, but my hands are out because I'm in need of something, versus just like that, let me just give an offer and what can I help with?
Yeah. And I think like, look, everybody ends up in that position at some time in some different business. Like, we've all been there, right?
Yep.
But I think that is like the kiss of death is when you get into that mode where you need something. And so you act needy, right? And so like anytime that I've been in a dip like that in my career, I've seen some of my team members do that. I lean into the give to others more and create more value. Because I'm a big believer in the giver's game philosophy, which is the philosophy of BNI and the BNI founder, right? But if you can have the wherewithal and the confidence to, in those troughs, lean into giver's mode more than taker's mode, you'll pull yourself out of the trough much faster. Because it also gives you the space and the credibility to then say, like, Jason, if we're having coffee and I say, hey, how can I help you and all that stuff? And then you turn and I help you with a few things, be like, Jess, I'd love to help you out. And be like, can I be honest with you? Like, I'm just not having that great of a year, that great of a month. Do you have any ideas of how I can boost my business? That's a way different conversation than being like, I need a referral, right?
Right, right. And people want to help. They want to brainstorm. They want to, you know, to get on the same side of the table. You know, it's interesting how much you could apply that to lots of things. Right. I know the other one that's good because I've learned this, but I don't use it very much just because I forget, which is the if you were me. Right.
Yeah.
Like if you were me, what would you suggest? Right. I'm thinking of like a broker with maybe an attorney and be like, hey, if you were me, what do you suggest? What are you seeing out there? What's working? What's not working? Because I think that's a good way. And just, you know, and sharing. So all right. So I love that list. I love the focus, the consistency, the other people's audiences. I think that's a great list to add on top of what we talked about with not being a jack of all trades or a master of none, which is a funny side story you have. Let's move on because I think this is important. It's always a good segment of the show, which is the deal that got away. So it's the lessons of the lost deal. It's one that you remember where it was should have been a deal. It could have been a deal. Something happened where it wasn't, or it stopped for a while and came back. And know for you, you have one that still, I wouldn't say, I don't know, weighs on you. I won't put that words, but like, what have you got?
Yeah. So it was a mitigation company. They did fire mitigation. And one of my husband's brokers in Colorado actually brought it to me as a potential exit factor client. Cause he said, the owner wasn't quite ready to sell, and he wasn't sure if he was going to sell. He might have been considering transitioning it to his son, right? Okay. But there was a valuation gap, right? It was like, you know, similar was worth $500,000 and wanted $2 million, right? And so he introduced me to the owner. We did kind of chase him down a couple of times to have a conversation, and he said, you know what, Jess, I'm just 2 or 3 years out. Like, this just isn't a priority for me, right? And I said, okay, well, respectfully, and walked him through the timeline and all that stuff. And he's like, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but like, let's touch base next year, right? So this is about in June. So in October, the broker calls me and he says, I have terrible news, right? And he's like, that owner and his son passed away in a car crash. And now the wife is in charge of the business. And I was like, well, that's terrible, right? It's just absolutely horrible. He's like, well, it gets worse, right? The financials are a mess. The business was completely owner dependent. I thought it was worth $500,000. I don't think I can sell it. Like, I just don't think I can. And so we had a couple calls with the wife, and obviously there's a whole personal dynamic. She's completely distraught, right? And all this stuff. And so now taking focus and energy to try and fix this broken business to save it or sell it for the estate or whatever is just not feasible, right? And so on top of everything, they ended up bankrupting that company, and walking away from it. And so that's the one that got away or that weighs on me. And so whenever I have an owner that's like, oh, it's not a priority. Is that, and I'm feeling like a little bit of a pest, but I'm feeling like in my gut that this is the right thing for them. I'm bringing up that situation back because I'm a big believer in that. What we do is super powerful for business owners. Like, most business owners have 80 to 90% of their wealth tied up in their business. And if they don't have a good way to extract that wealth, it doesn't just affect them. It affects their families. It affects their employees' families, the local community. Like, there's this whole ripple effect. And so I feel this mission and purpose behind of, yeah, on paper, you need to plan for an exit 5 to 7 years in advance, but this is what it means in reality, right? So,
yeah. And I think it's important. And that's obviously a tragic story. Even if you had started working, like, you probably would have only gotten so much done because you said it was from like June to October as far as that timeline. But I think it's an important cautionary tale. And what I love, because when I've done sales in the past or helped people where, you know, it's, I want to put pressure on you to buy or make a decision, whatever that means, but I don't want it to seem like it's my motivation incentive. I used to joke with people. It's like, there's 8 billion people on the planet. Whether you buy from me or not, I don't really care. Like, it's not going to change my life, but here's why it's important to you, right? This is why I care and why I'm pushing you for you. And I think that story is so important, because even if something tragic happens, you only have 5 or 6 months, at least it's 5 or 6 months of something and getting something in alignment. And like, you just never know. And I think, you know, as humans, we mostly think we're invincible and we've got all the time that we need.
And, I think a lot of us think we let go of that as, you know, from our teenage years, but I think we still, most of us think we're invincible until, you know,
definitely.
Yeah.
until we're not, for some reason. I don't know. Yeah, exactly. I still think I am. My family's constantly remind me, like, okay, just be careful. Like, stop. don't do anything crazy. Like, and I think that's tough. I mean, I think that's a tough story, but I think it's very valuable that you share that, you know, with the potential people who are just maybe stalling or feeling like you're pushing them. It's like, it's not about you.
Right? No.
Like, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
Right. Exit Factor will be okay without this one business that you're helping, but you know.
Yeah. And I think in reality too, like, most entrepreneurs will be okay. Right. Because especially like creative entrepreneurs, like, if they don't sell this business, maybe they get in, they fall up, right? Basically fail up. But it's more about, and like, kind of mine and my husband's backstories, we come from small business families and things like that. It's more about your family, the next generations, your employees. Like, that impact is way bigger than your personal impact. Right. So,
yeah. No, I think that's true. All right. So I feel like it's a somber way to.
I know. I don't like sharing that story because it's like, it's a downer, but it's also, you're right. It's important. Right. So
it's okay. I think I'm trying not to be like happy, you know, because like sometimes when you watch the news and it's like a terrible story and then they transition into something else.
And today, like Santa Claus.
These puppies were just it's not enough time. But we're going to do this anyway because it's time to wrap up. So, there's a lot of great content you're putting out. The algorithm everywhere I go now is showing me everything on you. And I know that you're producing lots of stuff. All of your links will be in the show notes for people who want to reach out to you, want to follow you. Your company, the website's very easy. It's exitfactor.com. You have your book, which is exitfactorbook.com. It's also available on Amazon, LinkedIn, Instagram. Your email will be in the show notes. Anything else that I'm missing that you want people to check out or that you're really excited about in 2026?
No, we've got a lot of good stuff coming in 2026. The book is fairly new though. So I'll still say, that's a big focus for us. That was released in September. So if you also buy the book, there's a downloadable on exitfactorbook.com, just a quick guide that we just released. I'm in the midst of recording the audio version. Oh, so I get that all the time. Wow. But I will tell you, like, anybody that goes out to factorbook.com, we'll send a teaser out for the audio ahead of time. So yeah.
Yeah. That's great. I know, because I found that recording the audible of the first book that I published was actually harder than writing the first book that I wrote. Yeah. Editing was a pain, but I had editors for that. But recording it, that's a lot of work. People always ask me and I'm like,
nights where, you know, I'll be reading to my son and he'll be like, "Mommy, can we do 3 books?" I'm like, "Oh, my throat is sore after 3 children's books." So my book's not long, but it's, you know, it's a couple hundred pages. It's a lot longer than 3 Paw Patrol books, right? So
it is, and I won't go into it, but yeah, there's a lot that goes into that, and you can't just have somebody edit it like you can words on a page. It's got to be consistent. So I'm excited for the book. And Jess, I appreciate you being here and sharing all this on all sides of the fence, the brokers, the buyers, the sellers, and what you're doing to help the business owners with their value creation and maximizing that. And I just appreciate you being on here, leveraging my audience. So thank you.
Thank you so much for lending me your audience. And it was great to be here. Great conversation. Hopefully it's valuable too.
I'm sure it is. I know I took lots of notes, which usually is a great sign. And for everyone tuning in, make sure to subscribe, follow this. And again, check out the show notes and reach out to Jessica. Follow Exit Factor. you know, and just understand more of them all, especially if you're a broker, if you're a business owner, definitely do it. Start early, like we talked about. There's so much in there, so much that we talked about in the show that's valuable. And for everyone tuning in, until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.